Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
Let's start off this podcast talking about the non-farm payroll report last Friday. This January non-farm payroll report showed that there were 143,000 net new jobs created. This was short of the 175,000 jobs that were expected. The BLS's annual benchmark revision showed that there were hundreds upon hundreds of thousands of jobs less than was originally reported. In other words, once again, the BLS's birth-death model created more phantom businesses than what were in reality created. And hence, the number of imaginary employees was greatly exaggerated and needed to be adjusted downwards. Meanwhile, wages were up 4.1% year over year versus the 3.8% expected, and the unemployment rate fell to 4% from 4.1%. A weakening labor market with higher wages holds a whiff of stagflation for me. In my view, the number from the Labor Department will show much weaker job growth over the next few months. And let me tell you why. First off, the greatly reduced benchmark revisions will necessitate that the BLS lower their birth-death model and thus bring down the number of new jobs assumed in each monthly report. Secondly, tighter immigration controls and deportations will significantly reduce the labor force and monthly hiring figures. And finally, stubbornly high inflation and tariffs are leading to increased uncertainty and consumer stress, which negatively affect business hiring practices. Oh, and thankfully, President Trump is eliminating the wasteful positions in government. So that's another reason why we will not see huge non-farm payroll reports going forward, at least for the first few months of 2025. In fact, my research shows that the government was on pace to hire 80,000 jobs, but that's federal, state, and local government, 80,000 jobs they averaged per month last year. And a lot of that's going to be gone. And speaking of the flailing consumer and their battles with weakening job market and inflation and stronger inflation, we look to the University of Michigan's consumer confidence for more evidence. Consumer confidence in February fell to 67.8 from 71.1 that was expected. Consumer sentiment fell to the lowest since July of 2024. That's their sentiment. But their one-year inflation expectations jumped to 4.3% versus 3.3% in the prior month. Consumers' inflation expectations are now at a 14-year high. The consumer price index for January showed that the core rate of inflation rose to 3.3% year over year versus the estimate of 3.1% and as opposed to the 3.2% posted in December. So 3.3 was what the core rate was. That was higher than 3.2 in December and higher than the estimate of 3.1. Headline CPI came in at a flat 3% versus the estimate of 2.9, and that was the same figure, 2.9% for December. Of course, the 3% headline number and the 3.3% core rate is not anywhere near 2%. It is 50% higher than the Fed's target. In fact, the Fed has missed its asinine 2% target for just shy of 4 years by 2 months. So 2 months from now, and there's no way inflation is going to be 2% in 2 months. 2 months from now, inflation will have been higher than 2% for a total of 4 years. Ironically, President Trump said minutes before this morning's release of the CPI that interest rates should be lower. The Fed, by the way, maybe he doesn't know this, but he should if he doesn't. The Fed does not lower borrowing costs by decree. It does so by printing more money to buy bonds that sends yields lower. It creates money by fiat, by decree, and buys bonds, which causes yields to fall. Artificial low rates that are caused to exist by the creation of new money is not the way you get prices to fall. In fact, it is the perfect prescription for more inflation, which we don't need. And incredibly, Fed head Jerome Powell is on Capitol Hill this week taking a victory lap on inflation, saying, it's been brought down from 9% to the 3% level. But in truth, it's the level of prices that has already bankrupt the lower three quintiles of consumers, as the prices for food, shelter, insurance, and many other staples of life can continue to rise further and faster out of reach. So sad. This persistent inflation problem dovetails nicely with the next topic, which is the record high price of gold. We have owned about a 5% weighting in an inflation ETF that holds gold mining stocks. We recently added to our exposure to gold with a physical ETF holding of about 3%. Now, there are actually a few reasons why gold should be going down right now instead of setting record highs. Foremost, a stronger dollar, a much stronger dollar. That's traditionally a headwind for gold. Of course, you can't get any more important than rising nominal and real interest rates. That's a headwind for gold. And when you add in Bitcoin stealing some of gold's thunder, and one would think that gold could and maybe should be in a bear market. However, as stated, it is nudging up against $3,000 an ounce and setting new record highs. And here's some reasons why that's happening. Intractable U.S. debt and deficits. By the way, the House GOP, I'm a libertarian. I voted for Trump. I'm not a member of the Republican Party. But the House grand old party just proposed a $4 trillion increase in the debt ceiling. Then again, we also have inflation pushing investors into precious metals. We talked about that. Also, foreign governments are issuing dollars and treasuries and instead are deciding more and more to place their trade surpluses into gold. But there is another and totally new reason why gold has been shining brightly of late. There are some people in power who are trying to convince the Treasury and the President to revalue its holding of gold from its current $42 per ounce to some level that is much higher. Now, the U.S. Treasury owns about 261 million ounces of gold that is currently valued at $42 an ounce. So that comes to about $10 billion. If the Treasury were to mark these gold ounces to a market, fair market value, they would be worth about $750 billion. Now, as to why the Treasury is still modeling the gold price at 42 is a mystery to me. It's Treasury's part of government, and they're full of morons. And there's a whole lot of people as well who are like me who don't understand why they don't just say, hey, we have gold and it's probably worth something close to $3,000, not $42. That would make a lot of sense to a lot of people, right? But the point is, who cares? Who cares what the accounting pencil neck geeks at the Treasury value their gold at? This is an internal accounting method for the Treasury. It does not change the fact that the Treasury's gold holdings total about $750 billion. However, and this is where it gets really funky, if the Treasury were to revalue its gold to reflect a fair market price, this enables the Fed to repo the gold. In other words, the Fed could print 750 billion dollars created by decree and hand it over to the Treasury. Now, it would be fine to say the Treasury could sell the gold on the open market and raise some money to pay down debt. That would be fine. But to propose the Fed should monetize the gold with newly created dollars is insanity. The Treasury would then use that newly created phony money to pay off some of our debt and flood the economy with a one-time humongous QE injection. That would lift every asset in the world especially gold. Now, sadly, some are even calling for the Treasury to mark to model, which is what they do now. Don't mark it to model at 42. Why don't you mark it at $140,000 an ounce and pay off the entire U.S. debt? Voila! It's gone. What a nice trick. There's people actually, influential people in the media, talking about this. What a recipe for hyperinflation. Of course, this would be wonderful for gold. But 142,000 gold per ounce is not on the menu for the near term, in my opinion. But some other number, say 3, 4, or maybe even 5,000 could be. This is another reason why gold is shining more brightly than ever. Because the debt is insurmountable, it's intractable, and they're coming up with new ways, new creative methods to monetize it away. In other words, counterfeit it away. I have one final thought. Donald Trump has, thankfully, put an end to the Treasury's issuance of the penny. The penny is going extinct simply because it costs 3.7 times more to make a penny than what a penny is actually worth, you know, what a penny will actually buy. If we keep this profligate printing and borrowing up, we may soon retire all coinage and maybe even every bill that's under $100. Maybe we'll have a $500 bill, $1,000 bill, $10,000 bill, maybe a $10 million note. Who knows? And this is where I want to leave this podcast off. You must accurately model the inflation-deflation dynamic like never before to give your investments a chance, because we are not in, this is not your father's or grandfather's market or economy. Over time, the swings between depressions and hyperinflations should be enormous. And the only way the best way to survive and thrive in those environments is to own an inflation-deflation hedged and modeled portfolio.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of the Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.